And that is welcome sound for everyone who is just joining in for Coffee with the Coder today, episode 98. We were in the middle in our insiders portion of listening to Paula discuss AFib. Did you want to finish your conversation, Paula?
I do, but first I have to say, you know, I have to give a shout-out. My nephew is not on this call, but my nephew did the intro music, guys, and, you know, I was just dancing to it as we were listening to Pam. So, you know, just wanted to say, hey, shout-out. Thanks, Josh. Anyway, just to finish up our talk on AFib, it may interest you to know that in ICD-11, we're not there yet, but hey, it's coming, right? There's a few more options for AFib. You may not be aware, of course, that it's anticipated to be coming in or implemented sometime after January 2022. We don't know an exact date yet, but that's just the anticipation. Anyway, added to the codes that we have right now for AFib, which are paroxysmal, persistent, permanent, other, and unspecified, they add to that in ICD-11 options, familial or genetic, pre-excited AFib, which occurs in the setting of a pre-excitation syndrome where part of the ventricles are activated too early, like Wolff-Parkinson-White syndrome. Now, that syndrome is actually where there are extra electrical pathways between the upper and lower chambers of the heart, causing a rapid heartbeat. Also, they've added sick sinus syndrome to this code set for AFib, and sick sinus syndrome with tachybrady syndrome with AFib. And then they also added, which I'm so excited because it's one of those things that we want to know medically, they added the code for cerebral ischemic stroke due to cardiac embolism, which is stroke due to AFib-related clot. So that assigns or associates those conditions related to AFib. There's also a code added for scar-mediated macro reentrant atrial tachycardia, which is atrial tachycardia due to scar after ablation for AFib. So, yeah, guys, don't let your heart run away on this one, but we're going to get into the questions now. So thank you for just a few minutes going over on those insiders. And, guys, if you're not joining us for the insiders, you know, come at 10 o'clock. There's no cost. Just show up at 10 and we do a little training about something or talk about something cool in the industry. So, Pam, I'm going to turn it over to you. And if you'll ask the questions, I'll just repeat them because I have them here on my teleprompter in front of me tell you what the questions are that we researched for today. And I keep looking at my picture on my – but actually I need to be looking at you right there in front of me, right? So, okay, Pam, first question.
Thank you, Paula. I just wanted to give a shout-out before you start listening to the questions. We recently got our 100th listener. Celebration. We are very, very excited. And, of course, we'd like that number to be higher because we do want to make a difference in our world as far as helping people to connect the questions with the answers and the chapter and verse of where you're going to get the answers and that sort of thing. So currently all of our previous episodes are available at aq-iq.com under the Ask tab. I can't promise they will always be there, but if you want to go back and listen to some, currently they are there. Many of them are many of them are posted on our social media pages, which is great. And anyway, so let me just jump in these questions. And before I do that, one more thing. You know, every episode we do what we call, tongue-in-cheek a little bit, mugging, okay? And that is where we send a free mug to someone who asks a question non-anonymously. And then once in a while, the experts choose all anonymous questions for an episode. And in that case, the person who's going to get mugged is a person who dialed in to listen. So today is one of those days, and if you dialed in to listen, you are in the running for today's mugging. I'll only call out the last couple numbers of your phone number, and I'll connect with you after it's over. But, yay, one of the audience members is going to get a mug today. Well, it'll be sent out. Anyway, so our first anonymous question is from an acute hospital setting. Is it correct to place a patient in observation routinely following surgery?
Ooh, good question. You know, we see this a lot in audits. And I think that there's a lot of maybe misunderstanding about how that needs to work. First of all, to answer the question very directly is no. It is not appropriate to place a patient in observation routinely following surgery. So I pulled up a local coverage article from CMS, and that was on the article is A52985. That is from Change Request 6492. And the specific statement, it says, general standing orders for observation services following all outpatient surgery are not recognized. Hospitals should not report an observation care service that are part of another Part B service, such as postoperative monitoring during a standard recovery period, for example, 4 to 6 hours, which would be billed as recovery room services. Observation services should not be ordered by the physician for future elective outpatient surgery. This question also, from my perspective, causes the question of, you know, when you start to talk to your docs about this, what is the medical necessity for keeping the patient following surgery? And it can't just be for patient convenience or physician convenience. There has to be something going on. Now, with Medicare, they're going to bundle that observation charge. If you do put it on the bill, they're going to bundle it with the actual surgery charge anyway. But it would not be appropriate to routinely do, was the answer to the question. And oh,
thank you.
And, sorry, guys. I don't know if you heard the question, but the question was, and I think I restated it, was, is it correct to place a patient in observation routinely following surgery? So there you have it.
Thank you, Paula. I'm going to hop over to another anonymous question. This one's from the outpatient physical therapy setting. And the question is, if a plan of care is completed, is an order also required? And I guess you can restate that for our Facebook audience.
Yeah, thank you. That's a good question, too. And this was related to outpatient physical therapy. It's like, as Pam said, it's an anonymous question. It says, if a plan of care is completed, is an order also required? There's another one. Good question, and we do see this a lot. Actually, no, an order is not required. However, according to CMS, an order is strongly, that's their wording, recommended. For those on the line that are not aware of how those outpatient services work, an outpatient therapy service requires a plan of care per episode, per therapy discipline, okay? A plan of care, like I said, is separate per therapy discipline. So if the patient is seeing speech therapy, physical therapy, occupational therapy, there's a different plan of care needed for each one. The plan of care has to be established and written before treatment begins. Now, there is some caveat to that. So the only time the plan of care can be done after the care is initiated is if the treatment is performed by the same clinician who established the plan of care. So think about that in the way, let's say a patient goes to physical therapy, they establish the plan, the physical therapist establishes the plan of care and then begins treatment right away. He hasn't had time or probably hasn't actually documented or created that plan yet, but it's okay because it's the same person. As such, the plan of care requires certain elements like the diagnosis, the long-term treatment goals, the type, amount, and duration and frequency of the therapy services. And in some states, short-term goals are also required. Now, that said, the plan of care is typically established by the therapist and then signed by the therapist and the physician or nurse practitioner or mid-level, not nurse practitioner, I guess it could be a nurse practitioner, but the non-physician practitioner, the mid-level, who is ordering the care. So you think about that plan of care actually is the same as an order, you know. So orders are not required, but according to CMS, the, you know, recommended because they provide evidence that the patient needs the therapy, and they provide evidence that the patient is under the care of a physician, which is required, or physician or non-physician practitioner, which is required. And I have to shout out because I just saw Shauna pop up. Hey, Shauna, nice to see you this morning. So, okay, come on, Pam, next question.
All righty, we're going to go back to an acute hospital this time for this anonymous question. Is it okay to use the expected payment amount to determine principal diagnosis for an inpatient record if there are two conditions that equally meet the definition of principal diagnosis.
Okay, awesome, awesome. Okay, let me repeat the question. Is it okay to use expected payment amount to determine the principal diagnosis for an inpatient record if there are two conditions that equally meet the definition of principal diagnosis? If you read the first half of that question and you stopped and you didn't see that two conditions, you're like going, no, you can't just swap them all around and put them where you want them to make more money, because that would not be right, right? And it sounds simple, but it's actually quite complex. What you want to do and what we have to recommend that you do is that you make sure and evaluate that record from a clinical and a coding perspective to make sure that, it can weigh one way or another. If there's two diagnoses, is one more significant than the other? And, of course, the significant means they meet the guidelines or the rules for the definition of principal diagnosis, which is the chief condition for establishing the care determined after careful study. So it could happen all the way through the encounter. We're talking about an acute inpatient admission, acute hospital admission. That truly is a situation where you have two conditions that equally meet, then yes, price could be a factor or the relative weight in order to select that. I mean, you're providing care, and it is completely defensible. You're providing care for those conditions equally. So from a facility perspective, I would say, wouldn't you want to get that payment that is appropriate for the higher level of care, which is how they've determined the rates. So there you have it. Pam, back to
Thank
you.
That was eye-opening. I started reading that question, and I'm like, wait, doesn't everybody know you can't do that?
I did the same thing. So, yeah, when you start to read the question and you don't read all the way through the question, then you're like, wait, you can't just change it there. But then when you see that that rule about the two equally meeting conditions that meet the definition of principal, that's what changes the question.
Definitely. Well, and there's always a caveat in there somewhere, isn't there? Which makes what you do so fascinating. Well, thank you so much. I'm just excited that we got this chance to do Facebook Live and Coffee with the Coder at the same time. How awesome. And I've got another task here. Before I get to the last task, I'd like to invite everybody. It's going to be 2 weeks from today when we do episode 99. That'll be September the 28th. I hope you'll bring your friends, invite folks along, let them know, send in some questions. Hop over to aq-iq.com and look for the Ask tab where it goes to Coffee with the Coder. There's a little form right there to put your question in. And you can ask it anonymously, or we'd like you to give your name so we can reach out to you if we have a question about your question. But you can definitely ask it anonymously, as you can tell by all anonymous questions today. So we do appreciate your questions and your interaction and telling your friends and all that. And so now let's see who's going to win this mug today. We have, in case you're new, you might not know that we have commissioned a special mug with our branding on both sides for your hot drink. Some of us call it a tea mug. Some of us call it a coffee mug. But whatever it is you like to drink out of is your business. And so we give one away every episode. And this episode, I've been writing furiously your phone numbers on little slips of paper on my desk. And so I'm fixing to see which phone number is going to win today. So I have someone whose number ends in 07, and the caller ID tells me your name is Lori. So you might not be Lori, you might be using Lori's phone, but I'm going to reach out to you when we're finished. And congratulations to person with the phone number 07 for today's mugging with Coffee with the Coder. Paula, did you have last words for us? Go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to say, guys, we got something special planned for the 100th episode. So bring all your friends, send in all kinds of questions, and we're just ready to have a party. Yeah!
Yes,
look
I'm
forward
so
to
looking
you guys
forward.
On 99 and 100, okay?
Absolutely. See you in 2 weeks.
Bye, guys.